Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, and welcome to Richard Rossi Live. So grateful to be with you today. Today's a very important show. It's going to really help you because we're going to talk about universal things that we all deal with in terms of our family background. We're all have to deal with certain things that we need healing from. It could be a dysfunctional family system. We're going to talk about the 12 steps, addiction, different issues that come up for people that can be healed and released through creativity, through art, through expressing ourselves. And we're going to get into that today on Richard Rossi Live. So don't go anywhere. I'm going to answer some questions from listeners and from friends on this topic and invite you to call in as well to the guest call-in number on your screen. I'll be back in 20 seconds. Thanks for tuning in today to Richard Rossi Live. Welcome back to Richard Rossi Live. I've got a lot of questions on this subject from listeners, and also I got some great questions were emailed to me from another radio host, Lindsay Lees, hosts a show on ACOA, Adult Children of Alcoholics, had emailed me some questions, and I'm going to incorporate some of those questions as well into our discussion. But I want to get right to it and talk about the role of creativity in recovery. Creativity allows us to talk about feelings and express ourselves. And sometimes in our childhood, because of different traumas or issues, we stuff our feelings, we don't express our feelings. I can share my own strength and experience and hope in this area that growing up there were certain feelings I wasn't able to express for various reasons. I mean, I grew up in a generation where to some extent, children were supposed to be seen and not heard. And, you know, if you express something that you're not supposed to express, you could get a spanking, get, repressed in some way. And so as we grow up, we hear a lot of no's from school, from church, from synagogue, from parents, teachers. We hear a lot of things that we're not supposed to think or say. And as a baby boomer, my parents' generation, particularly the men, were taught to not show our feelings too much, to not express our feelings too much. You know, that's for sissies. And so we become kind of reactors rather than actors. And if we had either mental illness or addiction or anything like that in the family growing up, sometimes as kids we have to be vigilant and take the temperature of how are the adults behaving and what's safe to say and not say. But through creativity, we're able to express these feelings. We're able to share things that maybe we didn't feel comfortable sharing. When I came out here to California, I moved here with my wife and two children from Pittsburgh. We made a 3,000-mile trip. And I was blessed to get into the class with the best teacher in Hollywood at the time in acting, Milton Casales. And I was able to watch this genius teach. And Milton gave an assignment that was very odd in the context of acting, but it really brought a lot of healing to my life in regards to my father and myself. Milton said, hey, I have an assignment. This will enable you to feel more. This will enable you to be the kind of actor that when you need to cry, you can cry. When you need to feel, you can feel. You won't be stuck. You won't be blocked. So, you know, we're ready for this acting technique. And Milton says, I want you to write a letter to your father and tell him everything you'd wanted to tell him but didn't feel you could tell him and ask for what you need from your dad. And I thought it was really odd. And he said, don't worry, you'll be able to just rip this thing up, you know, when you're done. And so I wrote a letter to my dad about how, you know, I just hungered for his blessing, his love, his approval. And when I was little, we had more ability, I think, to express some feeling. But my dad had an issue. He had an illness in which he was on some medication, and it just kind of made him kind of retreat and be kind of numb from this medication, and the ability to communicate and express was lost, so we did the best we can. We had as good a relationship as we could have, but there was just so much we weren't able to express because he was on some pretty heavy medication for bipolar disorder. So he was on lithium, thorazine, a lot of heavy-duty meds, unfortunately. So I wrote a letter to my dad, and it was something like, Dear Dad, growing up, I always hungered for your love, the ability to express my love to you and vice versa, and the ability to support each other and vice versa. And I know there's been some painful things in the past, but everything that's went on, all my mistakes, all the things I've done that have, any misdeeds and behaviors on my part that have been affected or hurt you, I'm sorry for, and I want to put anything in the past and any repercussions from the bipolar disorder, just anything negative, I just want to just put that behind us, and in the time that's left to really love each other, to really appreciate each other, I need your support as an artist, as an actor, and the creative work I do. I really want your blessing, your support, and I want to give you my blessing and support. That was the gist of the letter, and I was ready to rip it up, and because of my dad, and I want to not talk like that, for God's sake. And the acting teacher, Milton, says, no, you're not going to rip that up. I said, you said I was going to rip it up. I lied. Now I want you to mail that letter to your father. I said, are you crazy? We don't talk like this. I can't mail this to my father. Mail it to your father, Richard. Oh, my, I couldn't believe it. So I put it in the envelope, put a stamp, mailed it to Pittsburgh, home to my dad. And then after it was in the mailbox, I just, oh, my God, I can't believe I sent that. I can't believe I listened to that crazy teacher, And a month or so later, I call my dad. And I don't want to bring up the letter. It's just too uncomfortable. So we talk about the Steelers beating the Raiders. We talk about the weather. How's the weather back there? How was the winter back there? Sunny here in California. And that letter was hanging over the conversation, man, like an elephant in the room. And I finally brought it up. I said, did you happen to get a letter from me? And my father said, yeah, I did. I have it here in my wallet. I keep it in my wallet now because I read it every day. I read it about 20, 30 times a day. I have to tell you something about that letter. I took it to, and then he named a guy that was like the Marlon Brando godfather Italian, guy that you kissed the ring, a guy that was my dad's friend since childhood, a really tough Italian guy that we both loved dearly and respected like you want to believe. He said, I actually took it and showed it to, and then he mentioned the Italian man's name that was, like I say, a man that had just tremendous authority and influence over us and growing up, and he actually took it to this guy, which my dad only would bring this up to him if it was something really substantial, and he said it touched this friend of his, this tough guy, and he said, to my father, Dick, that's the most beautiful letter. It actually touched him emotionally, and he said, Richard's become a man to be able to state to you and ask what he wants from you emotionally like this. It just blew him away. And I tell you, after that, the healing in my acting class of my teacher having me do that, man, I could act on a whole new level. I could feel on a whole new level. There was something that was stuffed. And that's why creativity has such a role in recovery. All the feelings I'd stuffed came out, and I could write, and I could act, and I could do everything on a level of feeling. And I started to cry at chick flicks. In fact, I was watching a movie called Somewhere in Time down at a movie theater, New Beverly Cinema. Quentin Tarantino owns it. I was watching the movie Somewhere in Time there, and I was just crying. Oh, my God, I couldn't believe it. I was crying. I was crying. I hadn't cried in years. I mean years, since I was a kid. And I got a copy of Somewhere in Time and showed it to my dad, and my dad cried. It released something in my dad, that whole thing. I'd never seen my dad cry in my entire life. and he passed away shortly thereafter. Wow, the arts are so important. Here's another question that came in. How important is it to acknowledge the role of being raised in a dysfunctional family system? I think it is important because it's hard to express our feelings and get better in areas where we need to get better emotionally, psychologically, if we deny stuff, we don't talk about stuff. And that's why the arts is so important, because through our work as artists, and whatever that means, we're all creative. We're all created in the image of God. We all have that creative ability in us. It could be fixing a meal for someone. My wife does puppetry. My daughter dances. My son's a singer-songwriter. I'm a musician, actor, filmmaker, writer. And so however we do this creative expression, for me, I wrote a whole novel expressing my feelings about certain things growing up and coming of age. And so art kind of clears out the closets and the cobwebs. I've worked in church work, politics, and art world, and I can tell you the artists are the ones who are the most honest of the three, because they can talk about stuff in their work. In fact, my family, my wife, two kids, and I, we went to family counseling for a while, and the family counselor said, this is the way that Richard expresses his feelings. Things I couldn't even express in my own family, I was able to express in my art. In dysfunctional family systems, we take on certain roles, R-O-L-E, not, we take on roles, R-U-L-E-S, but also roles, R-O-L-E-S, and one of them is the hero, the guy that carries the banner, you know, and the banner carrier. That was me. By the way, if you want to call in, the number is 347-637-2379. So I was the oldest kid, oldest of five, so, you know, I did the family hero thing. You know, when my dad was sick, I thought, well, I got to make dad better. I got to get him better. I became involved in church work, working as a minister and trying to save the world, trying to save my family, trying to fix the world without fixing me. And so I could see where I fell into those roles that come about, you know. And so the creative process allows us to get honest. Here's another question. Richard, how important is writing during recovery and healing? How important is the written word? Writing's really important. I was in a play in 1998, Elmer Gantry. I played the part of Elmer Gantry. Actress friend of mine, Wendy Winburn, was in the cast, and she said, why don't you read this book, Artist's Way, and I think you'll like it. Started reading the book, and the book recommended journaling in the morning, doing three morning pages. And I started doing that. I started writing three morning pages every morning. And it just really started getting my feelings down on paper like a brain drain. It really just started opening up things every morning, and sometimes I didn't know what to write, so I said, right, I don't know what to write. My son Josh is eating his Cheerios right now. But I just got in the discipline of, you know, writing down my feelings, and it got me in touch with my creativities, my ideas, and I'm kind of multitasking right now and having questions coming in. But as you start to write, what happens is your inner child speaks. That little part of you, that little kid that has those feelings, wants to express, starts, you know, talking and starts thinking and expressing that intuition, that voice inside. That's so important. And don't judge the morning pages. Don't judge the journaling. Just get in the habit of getting those feelings down. And what I found is when I did my more professional writing, you know, it just flowed better because I was in the habit of writing, you know, writing every day. It just made the flow come, and it was like, you know, writing was not such a big thing because I do it all the time. I do it every morning now, and I write down my feelings. Let's see, some other questions have come in right now. What are some recovery techniques that are effective? For me, as I mentioned, creativity and art, journaling, The acting has brought a lot of healing for me. I find I play parts as an actor that will bring up issues. And also, for me, acting is a real expression of grace because, you know, I'll identify with certain characters by playing their parts. And, you know, some religious people have laid trips on me like I shouldn't play the part of someone that does bad things or has certain issues. But for me, it's like a healing to extend compassion and grace to my characters, to look for the good and the bad characters I play and the bad and the good. Therapy has been very effective for me. I really like one-on-one therapy. I like the 12-step groups, the recovery support groups. Having healthy family time has helped me heal. In the 12 steps, one of the steps I really like is step 11, which is about prayer and meditation, and talks about continuing to maintain conscious contact with God through prayer and meditation. And when you maintain that conscious contact with God through prayer and meditation, it helps you cope with everything better. I like to read literature that helps me grow spiritually. Another question, how have the symptoms and characteristics, the negative symptoms and characteristics ended with your own children? Well, I think our children are better than us. They build on the work that we've done to recover. You know, we've done family counseling, my wife, two kids and I. That's something I never did in my family growing up. We didn't really have a chance to have kind of that kind of professional intervention on that level. You know, I pray that they continue to have lives of serenity and sanity. You know, when we moved out to California, our kids were really free. We were watching some home movies recently, and we were just having so much fun watching these movies when our kids are little. They're both in their 20s now. And we had so much fun. We were using our imagination and pretending to be different characters, and I was dressing up as Darth Vader and chasing my son and his friends around the neighborhood, and then they'd take off my Darth Vader helmet, and I'd say to my son, "I am your father," and we did have so much fun. And the geographic move for me from Pittsburgh at the time really enabled us to, you know, you can't always make a geographic cure, but in our case it did work. I mean, just to get away from where I grew up and some of the folks. At the time, I had some pretty negative energy in my hometown from some folks that were really trying to bring me down. And so we just had to start fresh at the time. And our kids got to grow up with a lot of freedom from some of the unhealthy stuff. When they were real little, I was in the fundamentalist church world, which I've come to believe has a lot of child abuse in it. In fact, I confronted parents in the fundamentalist church world. I'd see marks on their kids when they would play with our kids, and they would justify it and say, well, the Bible says, you know, spare the rod and spoil the child. And then also that there was a lot of fear used to scare kids a lot in that world about, you're going to go to hell if you do this, you're going to go to hell if you do that. So when we moved to California, California as a culture at the time fit more with my values of how I wanted to raise my own kids. You know, I believed in my concept of God was different from the fundamentalist God. Was like a completely different God. I believed in a God of compassion. The fundamentalist believed in a God of condemnation. And so raising my children in an area that accepts creativity, that blesses creativity and individuality and grace and love and understanding, it was much healthier for our kids. I'm glad they grew up that way. Here's another question. I'd like to, I'm in recovery as an artist in 12-step recovery, and I haven't told my family of origin, siblings, etc., about being in recovery. I'm worried about how they'd react. What do you recommend? Well, first of all, the 12-step programs are anonymous programs. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous, Debtors Anonymous. Anonymous means you don't have to tell. And, you know, you'll have, it's average, it's normal to have some conflict in your feelings when you start to talk about growing up and some of the issues in your family growing up. You'll feel like kind of guilty sometimes, like you're being disloyal to talk about it. You know, when I was growing up, they shamed us with, there was a story in the Bible, like, about Noah and his sons. And many people don't know, they focus on all of Noah's faith and all that, and not that he was human, because they always ignore, in the church world, the part of the story in Genesis where after the flood, Noah gets drunk, and he's just, like, passed out drunk, you know, after the flood, naked and drunk, you know. You know, one of the sons looks at him when he's laying there naked and drunk, and he's cursed. I think it was Ham was the one that was cursed, because the other two sons covered up the dad's nakedness. And there's a positive side of that, about covering up other people's sins and, you know, showing them grace. But that story was kind of distorted when I was growing up. You don't talk about anything in your family, because that's uncovering the nakedness of the family and the father, and God will curse you if you do it, that kind of thing. So, you know, yeah, when you think about your family of origin, your siblings, you might feel a little guilty to talk about these things, or uncomfortable to tell them that you're in recovery. And that's okay. You know, change is uncomfortable for people, and it might make them uncomfortable to know you're even doing that, because they're used to you being the way you are and not talking about it. I knew a friend that got into recovery, and they became so obnoxious. You know, they had, like, just enough knowledge of recovery and psychology to be dangerous. So they went back to their family of origin, and they were labeling everybody at the, you know, around the Thanksgiving table. And it's like, Harry, you're the lost child. And Paul, you're the you're a classic enabler. And, let's see about you, sis. Well, Alexis, you know, you are definitely the scapegoat. And I think you're the family hero. Yeah, you're the family hero, Mary. And they just drove everybody nuts, acting superior and talking about the recovery this and recovery that. So, no, you don't have to bring that up. Just work on yourself right now and heal yourself through art and heal yourself through recovery and heal yourself through your connection with God. Now, I think a good kind of affirmation or thought to focus on is that you will integrate recovery into your life through creativity, through play, through spirituality. You'll integrate this healing process I'm talking about in your life and open yourself up to it, because it really is a very powerful thing. By the way, upcoming shows we have, I want you to know on Saturday, this coming Saturday, to mark your calendars, our next show, we're going to be talking about Roberto Clemente, my childhood hero, the baseball star. And it's going to be Saturday, 10 a.m. Pacific time, and we're going to have some live guests from the cast. Marilinda Rivera, winner of Project Runway, the model show, such a beautiful, beautiful woman, Puerto Rican model, played the female lead in our film, will be calling in. Charles Hoyes, great actor, plays manager Murtaugh in the film, are confirmed to be calling in. And it's also, we're going to be talking about the film that I made, Baseball's Last Hero, 21 Clemente Stories, on the show this Saturday at 10 a.m., and talking about the upcoming screening that will be happening on April 26th. We've got a screening April 26th, Saturday night, at Sherman Oaks United Methodist Church at 7 p.m. And there's wonderful arts events happening there. The following Saturday, my friend Amanda, a great opera singer, will be singing there May 3rd at that same congregation. So she's giving a great concert. So there's a lot of exciting things coming up. And I appreciate all of you writing in and letting me know how my book, Create Your Life, has helped you, Daily Meditations on Creativity. If you want to call, we have a few minutes left in the show. It's 347-637-2379. 347-637-2379. And I'm really grateful to all of you who have also taken the time to send in some emails and let me know how the show's been a blessing to you. I like these shows where I just talk to you one-on-one, and I also like the shows we've brought on Oscar winners and people have been nominated for Oscars. But the subject of family and healing is such a huge thing, what we've been talking about. You know, Jesus himself was an artist. Jesus told parables to illustrate spiritual truths. And his story of the sower and the seed is an example, you know, how the seed has to be watered and nurtured. And some artists growing up receive healthy nurturing and healthy families, and that allows them to blossom and they find a mentor. And other people grow up with family systems or cultures that say, hey, get a real job, don't pursue the singing, don't pursue the acting. That's why in my novel, Stickman, I wrote a dedication that says, for creative, wounded, hurting children the world round, whose precious seeds are too often choked by weeds, snatched by birds, and struggling to hatch in rocky ground. So family can be a source of kinship and support, but can also hurt you more than anyone when they don't approve. I was doing a play recently and in a local college here, and my talented daughter, Karis, was also in another auditorium in the same facility dancing in a dance show. And I was in an adjacent theater, you know, performing in a play. And one of the dancers said, how cool is this? You're in one theater doing a show, and your daughter's in the other theater. And the same night, my son Josh and his band, the Aeons, were playing on the Sunset Strip, and my wife had finished her puppet commercial, a PSA about not texting and driving. So we're all thriving. We're all doing our arts, and we're all trying to support each other. My dad was a talented musician. He taught me guitar. He was a really, really good, great, great jazz guitarist. When I first started composing my own music, he kind of gave me a little bit of a hassle about it because he wanted me to play the stuff the way he knew to play it. He was much more experienced. But he eventually came around to be complimentary in my music. But when your family isn't complimentary, that can hurt. So when you create your life, if your family doesn't understand at first, just keep pursuing your dreams, because when you pursue your dreams, you give them permission to pursue their dreams. Now, we're coming down on our closing minutes. I noticed we got a caller, and it looks like my talented opera singer friend Amanda, if I read that number right. Hi, Amanda.
Hi,
are you there?
Yes, I am here. Hi there.
So are you excited about your upcoming concert?
I'm very excited, yes. Thanks so much for the plug. Yeah, it's going to be over at the United Methodist Church in Sherman Oaks. And I have a wonderful, wonderful pianist, Suzanne Reeser, who will be playing with me. And we'll be doing many different works, all the way from Purcell to some brand-new 21st century works. So, yeah, I'm thrilled.
And it's Saturday, May 3rd.
Yeah, Saturday, May 3rd at 7:30.
Wow. Well, I heard you sing, and it was transcendent. It took me to a whole other place. You're one of the best singers I ever heard.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, I was calling in because I love listening to your show just now, talking about the role of art in recovery. And, you know, I was thinking to call in and mention that I feel like singing in particular has been incredibly healing for me and a lot of singer friends that I know. Even just the process of studying and breathing seems to be just tremendously healing.
Mm.
I thought maybe you could talk a little about that in the next couple minutes.
Oh, talk about what again, Amanda?
About the role of singing in healing.
That's awesome. That's awesome. How has it healed you? Has it been the emotional expression or the breathing relieving the stress? How do you think it works? I know sometimes it works and we're not sure how it works. I'm not even sure how it all works, but how do you think
I'm not really sure how it works, to be honest. I just know that the more that I do it, the better I feel. And when I don't do it, I find that I'm just sometimes just a mess. But for some reason, it seems to work physically. It works, you know, your breathing mechanisms. It just seems to kind of calm your body down, to breathe really deeply when you sing opera or sing classically. And of course, expressing all of the emotions through all of the different songs, a spectrum of emotions that it brings up is incredibly healing.
Mm. Yeah, I'm mindful there's a biblical story you're making me think about. Where King Saul is troubled and oppressed, and David just starts playing music for him, and it calms down, and his demons leave. I love that story.
Oh, yeah. That's actually the story that I think of during one of the songs I'm doing in the recital. It's a piece called Music for a While by Purcell. It's a really old Baroque song, but it talks about, you know, the words are music for a while, let all of your cares beguile. And I imagine David walking up to King Saul and you know, this huge task he has to battle the demons through music, but I could just imagine him just kind of effortlessly just worshiping and changing the atmosphere through his music.
Well, you sure do that with your singing, and I hope people listening can come out and hear you on Saturday, May 3rd.
Thanks so much. Yeah, I hope so.
Do you have a website where they can find you?
You know, I just am figuring out this brown bag ticket thing. I don't have it completely figured out yet, but they certainly can find it through Facebook.
Okay.
If they desire. It'll be just Amanda Kadlubek in recital if they want to find it through there, through the event. It's an open event. Or they can go to the church website. I know it's up there on their website, all the details.
So it's at Sherman Oaks United Methodist Church?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Okay. I don't know if I'm putting you on the spot. We're actually kind of out of time, but and feel free to decline this. Are you able to, can you even sing like you did the other night over our place, a line or two from a song?
Oh,
or
wow.
You, or would
I
you rather
try.
I find
I don't know how it'll be on the phone. Gosh, let's see. I'm going to try to put the phone kind of across the room a little bit because
okay.
Otherwise I don't know how it would work. But, yeah, let me try a little bit of a Depuis le Jour. Let me try this.
Wonderful. Wonderful. You're going to be amazed at this voice you're going to hear, folks. Incredible opera singer. Music I've had for this show, I can tell you that. Wow, a live opera performance, folks.
And it's kind of rare to do that in the morning, to be honest. It's not something easily done. I had to take a swig of my tea there.
Well, thank you so much, Amanda, for calling in and sharing your beautiful voice and your insight. And thank you to all of you for listening. Once again, I've run a little over time, but it was well worth it for that treat. And we'll be back on here Saturday morning. Love to you all. Tune in Saturday at 10 a.m. Thank you, Amanda, and God bless each and every one of you. Richard Rossi Live, signing off.